morning. Welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin B. on the board, coming to you live from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text at 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Or leave a message on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Very excited to be joined by our next guest. She is an associate professor of forest wildlife management at the University of Maine. Amber Roth is joining us. Good morning, Amber. How are you?
Good morning. Happy to join you.
Well, I'm very excited about this. I've become this wannabe birder, and I am not a birder, but I love bird news, and I love things like this because it's important. So the American Birding Association recently announced the 2024 Bird of the Year is the Golden Winged Warbler, and that is a bird that is, it summers in Wisconsin, right, Amber?
That is correct, yep. And Wisconsin's a really important state for the breeding range of the species.
I can't tell you how excited Jane is to have you on the show today. She loves all things birds. When I saw that there was a story about how Wisconsin is involved with the Bird of the Year, she lit up like 10 kids on Christmas.
I think it's so cool, Amber, and because birds are such a huge part of our ecosystem and are really crucially important to the health of our planet, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're not just important to our ecosystem. They're an important part of our lives. Bird watching is like one of the top recreational activities in the country, and it only became more popular during COVID because, you know, people were stuck at home and doing things outdoors, and a lot of people started watching birds. So you're a big boat of people, Jane, with others that really found birding to be an exciting, you know, thing to do, to get them outside and something you can do with your family. You don't have to be an expert to do it. If you have a pair of binoculars, you can pick up bird watching. It's not all that hard. And a lot of people feed birds, right? A lot of people have birds in their backyards. So.
And there's rarely anything embarrassing when you're watching birds.
Yeah, you can do it in your pajamas, from your kitchen. Nobody needs to know, really.
I'm referring more to the bird behavior than the bird watcher's behavior.
Oh, yeah, you could do that. Or yeah, you could do that, too.
You know, you just might be, like, looking at birds, and you move the binoculars, like, oh, I didn't need to see my neighbors. That's fine. I do feel like Jane needs the vest, though. She needs the bird-watching vest with many pockets.
Well, you know, it's nice to have a field guide or a place to put your phone with your bird apps on it. And so it's nice to have pockets. Yes, I agree.
Well, so let's talk about the golden winged warbler and its presence in Wisconsin and its current status in Wisconsin. Is this an endangered bird?
Well, it depends, you know, where you are. And in Wisconsin, it is not, but it is a species of concern in the state. Wisconsin's has the second largest population of golden winged warblers. Only Minnesota has more. So Wisconsin's really critically important for the species, even though it's not endangered or threatened. But it is federally threatened in Canada, and it is endangered and threatened in five other states, as well as being a species of greatest conservation need in over 20 states.
Wow.
So it is a species getting a lot of attention. It is being reviewed for protection under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. So that's a review that's happening right now. I'm actually on that team of people that are gathering that information to help kind of understand whether golden winged warbler should be federally protected as a threatened or endangered species. So this is a really important time. So this is very timely that it was chosen as Bird of the Year, because this is a point in time where we're really evaluating what we need to do with this species moving forward.
You said that you are a part of the decision-making of whether or not the bird will become protected nationally. Is there a formula you apply to that, like threatened in so many states, on watch on so many states, and then you just make the decision? Or is this like a bigger deal than we know?
Well, first, let me clarify. Yep. We are only collecting information for another team of people that will make the actual listing decision.
I see.
So we're not. So I don't have that much power. but I am happy to contribute my expertise so that as much information as possible can be moved forward for that decision-making process. And you know, there is a very specific process that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has to go through in reviewing a species. This is actually kind of the second phase of the process that we're in now. The first phase was a 90-day review of the original petition. Now we're actually in the information gathering kind of phase of the one-year review.
If you're just joining us, Amber Roth is our guest. She is an associate professor of forest wildlife management at the University of Maine, and we're talking about the 2024 Bird of the Year, which is the golden-winged warbler. So I'm assuming, Amber, that one of the issues has got to be loss of habitat. Where do the golden-winged warblers like to hang out?
Yeah, so during the warm part of the year, they're in the Great Lakes states and up into Canada and Ontario, Manitoba. They also are throughout the Appalachian Mountains. There's kind of two separate regional populations. And then in the winter, the Great Lakes population travels to warmer winter climates in Central America, and the Appalachian population travels down to Northwest South America and Colombia and Venezuela. They got it figured out.
Yeah. You know, it's these are pretty little birds.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me that they can go such distances. That is remarkable.
Yeah, they're traveling thousands of miles. A golden wing warbler weighs 8 to 9 grams. So put 4 dimes in your hand, and that's how much a golden wing warbler weighs.
I think I could throw 4 dimes in South America.
Yeah.
What is the migration pattern as far as, you know, I'm going to attribute human qualities to a bird right now, but when they're saying to themselves, all right, it's time to head this direction, from start to finish, how long does it take them to get from their home to their summer, or to their winter home, if you will?
Yeah, it varies a little bit because they don't all have the same distance to travel.
Okay.
And they don't all have necessarily the same challenges. And we don't actually have like a really like great way of knowing exactly when they're leaving and when they're arriving.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can get one or the other, but getting both is really hard. You know, a lot of them are leaving their breeding grounds in August and September, and they're starting to arrive in the wintering grounds in October, certainly by November. So that gives you an idea that it's probably, you know, 1 to 2 months. Might depend on whether you're a first-time migrator or whether you've done this 6 or 7 times already as well. But
maybe, you know, they stop in Vegas for a couple of weeks, do a little gambling before they have to head all the way south and just, you know, do a little side trip.
Yeah.
Go see the Hoover Dam.
That might be a little bit of a detour. But they might stop in New Orleans.
There you go.
Much better.
Maybe there's, you know, some sort of Mardi Gras fun they can have down there.
I fully support this. With this, you know, with these this type of recognition for this bird, kind of a two-part question. One, when these birds are chosen for something like this, like Bird of the Year, are they generally either an endangered or a bird that has some, like, I don't want to say like fully endangered, but like, you know, are the people worried about the numbers? And two, do awards, do recognition like this help bring awareness to those birds to help the situation?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I honestly don't know all of the internal workings of the American Birding Association and how they make their decisions.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've had a variety of species. This was the first warbler that they've chosen. And, you know, I think they've had a variety of species. I don't know that they are not all endangered threatened species.
Okay.
But I think they are species that are in some way iconic and are birds that people can relate to and know, you know, have maybe some understanding of, but they've tried, I think, to get a variety of different species through the years as well. So
you have to share the glory.
Yeah.
You gotta spread the glory around to be the Bird of the Year. It can't just be one species all the time.
Attention. Yeah. Spread some of that attention around, right?
You bet.
I mean, it almost doesn't matter if you're endangered or threatened. Birds are just declining. I mean, we've lost 3 billion birds in the last 40 years.
God.
3 billion.
Yeah.
Is that
3 billion in the last 40 years? That's in North America alone. That's just in North America.
What's attributed to their loss?
A lot of birds. What was that?
What was the attribution? What attributes to the loss of so many?
Oh, well, it varies a lot. You mentioned habitat loss. That's actually a big one for a lot of species. It's probably the biggest issue. But there's also some really important causes of mortality, like having cats outdoors. Cats kill a lot of birds.
Yes, they do.
Colliding with windows, whether it's your house or a skyscraper downtown, they are, you know, colliding with windows. They're colliding with guidelines on communication towers. And then they migrate, right? And then there's like this whole gauntlet of obstacles they have to navigate to get, you know, to their wintering grounds, including crossing the Gulf of Mexico, which is a huge body of water.
Yeah.
And it's not like you just get across that in a minute, you know. You know, a hurricane can blow up and then really blow them off course.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of risk involved with migrating long distances like they're doing.
Especially when you weigh the equivalent of four dimes.
Four
dimes. That's crazy. Amber, do you have time to stick around for another segment? We'd love to talk to you for a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm happy to keep chatting.
Terrific.
I don't have anywhere else I need to be. So.
And we have a couple of folks on the line who I think want to either share winged warbler stories or have a question for you. So we will do that when we return. Stay close. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drum in a midnight choir.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Buck, Dr. Switch, coming to you from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Give us a call. Shoot us a text at 844-967-2789. We are joined by Amber Roth, as an associate professor of forest wildlife management at the University of Maine, talking about the recent designation of the golden wing warbler as the 2024 bird of the year. Amber, what can folks who are listening, what can we do other than put out bird feeders? Is that helpful?
Well, that's helpful for some birds. It's not helpful for golden-wing warblers. You're probably not going to ever see a golden-wing warbler at your bird feeder.
Okay.
They're not seed eaters. They eat insects. So if you want to see a golden-wing warbler, you're actually going to have to put your boots on and go out in the woods and look for them. And if you're in Waukesha, you might actually have to travel to northern Wisconsin to have a better shot at seeing them.
Oh,
they do migrate through southeast Wisconsin, but they're primarily breeding up in the more northern part of the state.
So they're going to make us work for it. If we want to see one, we're going to have to work for it.
I'll have Pat Kreitlow look for one.
Mark from Prairie du Sac is on the line. Good morning, Mark. Thank you for your patience. What did you want to? Did you have a question for Amber?
Yeah. Good morning. And I've called in before that I hang a little bird feeder next to me when I'm up in my tree stand deer hunting up far northern Wisconsin. And you know, usually it's chickadees and nuthatch, both kinds of nuthatches, woodpeckers, you know, hairies and downies, and that. But this year I think it must have been a common yellow-throated warbler, that hen that landed right in my gun rest in front of me. That it didn't go to eat any of the seeds at all, but just kind of took a look at me. Was probably checking out what other activity was going on, and then flitted off. But I mean, it was just kind of, it's just kind of fun when you have birds, I mean, literally in my face that are, you know, no fear of you when you're just sitting there quietly, and because a hairy woodpecker landed right in front of me as well, that in the same spot, that it just is, you see a lot. You see, this year I saw a pileated woodpecker several times, it's just wonderful to be out there and observe these creatures.
Mark, I've told you this before, you need a sidecar on your deer stand so I can come up there and hang out with you and just watch birds land on things.
It's a lot of fun. You know, the blue jays never come into me they're usually out in front of me if I put anything out there, but the other birds just seem to have no fear. You know, I haven't seen a brown creeper in a few years, but I know they're around. But it's just fun sitting up there and watching the birds.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much, Mark, and we really appreciate you listening. If you have a question for Amber or a comment, 844-967-2789. So what is next for the golden-winged warbler, Amber?
Well, I just wanted to say I really love that story. And I think, you know, an important thing even for you, Jane, is you don't need a deer stand to go out and enjoy birds. You can just go out and sit quietly and, you know, watch the birds. You know, once you give them a couple minutes for everything to calm down, like, you know, they will come in. And, you know, I've had chickadees land on me just standing quietly in the woods.
Seriously?
So, yeah. So I think it's all about slowing down, taking a moment to pause, go out, just enjoy being, you know, out in the natural world. And things like that will happen if you take the time to put the phone away and just kind of sit and watch and reflect. And, you know, things like that happen all the time if you give them a chance to do it.
that's part of it, too. But there's a woman I follow on Twitter who's a photographer, and I think she's in Missouri. And there is a park that she goes to all the time. And the birds have become trained to land in people's hands, and she calls it the hand of snacks. And so she's got all different kinds of seeds and, you know, the black sunflower seeds and stuff like that. And she photographs them hopping on her hand. And, you know, and I guess it took many, many years for these birds to get acclimated to this. But it's amazing to see.
And other birds see, they're like, oh, she's cool. Let's do this.
It's the hand of snacks is here.
We got a text from the 608 listening WAUK. I saw a golden-winged warbler near Madison, but it was during spring migration, nibbling at the tiny caterpillars on cherry blossoms.
Oh. So they are.
Perfect.
But they're traveling, right? Yeah. It was just, they're traveling through. So far as the status of the golden-winged warbler, though, is there anything that folks can actually do? Is there a habitat thing that we can help address, or?
Absolutely. I mean, and, you know, even on migration, right, that cherry tree was critical habitat for that golden-winged warbler in Madison that a person observed, right? So having native trees and plants and vegetation like that in your yard and in your parks creates that food resource for them to get back and forth to where they need to go. So that alone is really important. So having native plants in your yard is one great thing that you can do. Another, keep your cats inside or give them a nice enclosure that they can sit in outside. So the cat is safe and the birds are safe.
Or don't get a cat.
Cats are lovely. I agree with you, Amber. Cats are great, but I
agree to disagree.
This is a huge issue for cat owners.
Oh, yeah.
Cats kill tons of birds, tons and tons of birds. And this is just part of their nature. They're hunters, right, Amber? But you don't have to let them out to kill the songbirds in your backyards.
I think I'm just going to attribute all of them. Go on.
If they're outside, go outside with them. Like, be out there with them, right? So then you can kind of monitor their activities. So, you know, there's no reason they can't be outside. You just don't want them out hunting on their own.
Which,
right?
Again, this is their natural state of being. But again, we can curb that.
So what you're saying is I can't say that cats over the past 50 years have killed 3 billion birds.
Well, they've killed a good chunk, we'll say.
Take your cat vendetta. Take your cat vendetta somewhere else, Greg. Buck.
I don't have a vendetta. They make me sniffly.
Amber Roth is an assistant professor of forest wildlife management at the University of Maine. Sorry, I cut you off, Amber. What did you want to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, other things are, make sure your windows are not collision risks. Put, decals, or you can put UV paint on your windows, in front of your windows to keep them from hitting your windows. If you have bird feeders, make sure your bird feeders are far enough away that you're not attracting birds into your windows. There's things like that that are simple, and they don't just help goldwing warblers. They help a lot of other species as well. There's also the Goldwing Warbler Working Group. We have a website at gwwa.org. We're all volunteers, and it's a great way to get more information. If you want to learn more about what our projects are, there's projects going on from Wisconsin all the way down to Columbia, South America. There's opportunities for people to support those projects in various ways. So there's lots of ways that people can support support birds in general and goldwing warblers specifically. So the website can also give some ideas.
Well, guess what, Amber? You just made a friend for life because you're talking about birds, you're offering help, and Jane loves both of those things. So
it's just been a delight having you on. Amber Roth is an associate professor at the University of Maine talking about the very exciting 2024 Bird of the Year, the Golden Winged Warbler. I hope we can talk to you again sometime, Amber. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm happy to chat birds anytime, Jane. So, and I do come to Wisconsin periodically, so we could go birding.
You're totally on. Just shoot me an email. All right. Stay with us. When we return, we're talking Oscar nominations and movies. Matt Miller from OnMilwaukee.com will be here. This is Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Thank you so very much for joining us. Jane, Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Hey, basketball fans, basketball tonight, Michigan State at Wisconsin, 6 p.m. game. You can catch it on locally grown radio WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids and on news from the center, WRCE in Richland Center, Michigan State at Wisconsin tonight. The game is at 6 o'clock. Excited to have with us on Milwaukee.com's entertainment guru, Matt Miller is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Oscar nominations are out. A lot of them.
Controversy abound.
Controversy abounds, at least as far as we'll get to Greta and Barbie and all of those things. But I wanted to talk about Best Picture noms first, and I have only seen a couple of them, but after the list came out, Matt, I went and looked for trailers for all of these. American Fiction looks like it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, American Fiction is a fun, good movie. I should warn people, though, so the trailer for American Fiction plays really hard the satire aspect of the movie, that it is about this author, this black author, who writes a stereotypical racist black book, and that's the one that hits
sells
for him.
Yeah.
But it is, I would argue, it is mostly a movie, a family drama. It is mostly a movie about him and his family and him, learning to love his brother, learning to deal with his family, and kind of more about a guy not sure what his place is in the world. I think that's one thing people should know, is that it is not a, 2-hour satire movie. It's that most of the movie, honestly, is about him and his family, which is also really good. I would actually argue that's the best part of the movie, actually.
And is it Jeffrey Wright as the lead actor?
Oscar nominated Jeffrey Wright.
So good.
I believe that's his first nomination too.
Really?
I believe so. He's one of our best actors. He's always been one of our great, but it's always been smaller roles generally. It's always been great supporting roles for Jeffrey Wright. And I believe this is his first nomination. And it's a great role for him. He's a great actor, and he gets to feast on this one.
He, for a while, if you checked his Twitter account, he listed himself as a semi-retired actor. And you didn't see him very often. And then kind of after the Hunger Games blew up,
He was everywhere.
He's doing Marvel. He's doing Marvel cartoons. He's doing this. He's doing that. He's everywhere, and it's wonderful to watch. Because Jeffrey Wright, Matt, you are absolutely right. He is one of our best. And yeah. You get Sterling K. Brown in that movie, who just doesn't quit. And Tracy Ellis Ross. Yep. I mean, that cast is amazing. Yep. That cast is amazing.
It's Ray, isn't it? It's a really great cast. And I believe it's a first-time director as well, Cord Jefferson. And I forget what show he came from, what TV show I believe he was writing for. It's a really interesting movie about, you know, about the Black experience, about this particular Black experience, while also kind of shot through the lens of this satire of, okay, what do we think, you know, white readers want? So it's very interesting. It's very funny and very good.
Talking Best Picture nominees with onmilwaukee.com's Matt Miller. That was American Fiction, also up for Best Picture. Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest, Oppenheimer, and Maestro, which bored me.
Jane has hard opinions on Maestro.
Bored me beyond belief. I just couldn't stay with it.
Yeah, it does feel like every year there's a movie that gets a bunch of nominations, but it feels like those nominations came in before anyone saw the movie. Yeah. You know, I feel like people saw Maestro from Bradley Cooper, Carey Mulligan. Wow, you know, what an Oscar-y movie. Clearly this must be a good movie that is worthy of 7 nominations. And then Maestro comes out and everyone is at best like, oh, it's okay. Like, yeah. That's like where people land at best on it, but yet it still has a Best Picture nomination. It still has nominations for Bradley Cooper and for Carey Mulligan. It's just kind of, again, that's just kind of how this works every year. I do think sometimes when Oscar voters are, you know, looking at the awards, they're kind of like, I don't know, who fills the spot? Yeah. Sure, Maestro. I've heard that's supposed to be good. Well, you know, it's kind of like what happened when, like, The Danish Girl came out and people were like, oh, obviously Eddie Redmayne should get a nomination for that. That's such an Oscar-baity performance. And then it was like, it came out and I was like, oh, the movie's bad and he's bad in it. Like, all the nominations, like, they were like, oh, I guess I probably shouldn't have voted for that then. Yeah. You know,
it felt like with Maestro, Bradley Cooper really used his clout to push it before the movie even came out, because like he talked about, he'd been working on it for years, not just like writing and directing it, but like learning how to conduct a symphony. And he'd really gotten close to the Bernstein family and got them on board. So like he did an interview with all of them on a CBS Sunday morning. So like he was really prepping the world to be blown away by this. And even I was like, oh my God, this looks amazing. And then what happens with me with a lot of movies where I'm like, I got to see this movie. It comes out and I'm like, I'll see it later.
That's the curse of Netflix too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yes.
You know, Netflix makes these great movies, but they come out and then you're like, oh, it'll be there.
Meanwhile, so I watched The Adam Project for the 9th time.
Yeah. Or like Top Chef or something like that. But yeah. And I also think there's this odd thing with Bradley Cooper right now where, and this happens with a lot of actors. This happened with Anne Hathaway. This happens where it's like, oh, he really wants an Oscar and therefore maybe we'll nominate him. But like, we don't want to give it to him. You know, it's this weird thing with the Oscars where we don't want you to not want to have an Oscar, but we also don't want you to really want an Oscar. It's this weird tiptoeing that we insist. And Bradley Cooper, between this and A Star Is Born, has just seemed a little too thirsty for it.
You want it too much, Bradley. You just want it too badly.
He gives
That's
up
the thing. Yeah. Yeah.
He gives off that vibe of like, if you'd be like, hey, you want to get a hamburger? He's like, let me tell you why I want to get a hamburger. I'm like, no, don't. Yeah, don't pontificate everything.
It feels a lot like Bradley Cooper really wants you to know how great Bradley Cooper is in Maestro. That's the vibe of that. And that is a little bit of the curse of the writer, director, star thing, is that, you know, when you're writing a movie and directing a movie and then the lead in that movie, it's hard to not have the vibe of like, oh, this is like a glory trip. This is a little bit of an ego stroke here.
Right. Which other of the Best Picture nominees really stood out to you, Matt?
I think obviously the Oppenheimer, it was the leader in the clubhouse with nominations. It is probably going to be the leader on Oscar night in terms of wins. I think that is going to, it was a big year for Barbenheimer, and I think the Oscars will reflect that with, you know, I think those two are going to win a bunch of awards. I'm interested that Zone of Interest got nominated for Best Picture, which is a Holocaust drama by Jonathan Glazer, who did Under the Skin, Sexy Beast, and Birth. A very odd and different approach to a Holocaust movie about a Nazi family living right next door to Auschwitz. And just the movie is about how much they are totally ambivalent and ignorant of what is going on next door, and how much they just happily live their lives living next to one of the greatest crimes in humanity's history. But it's also very artfully done and very differently done. And I was always skeptical of it getting a Best Picture nomination, because, like, if anyone's seen Under the Skin, it's a very strange movie. I love that movie, but it's very odd. So it didn't normally seem like the Oscars' tastes, but, you know, The Color Purple kind of fell off people's radar after Christmas, and they always are going to have a hard time with animation. So the animated Spider-Man wasn't able to break through. So
it got a nod, didn't it get best? I think it got best animation, but I don't think it's going to win.
It got best animation, but it takes a little bit of work. Like, unless you're kind of like a Pixar movie and they're used to acclaiming you, an animated superhero movie, that can be a hard sell for the Academy.
Well, that's sort of like what happened, you know, with the first. I mean, I contend that the second Spider-Verse movie is as good, if not better, than the first one. But I think because of the style, because of it's superhero, of course the first one won. And that sort of like kind of goes with what, like, along the same lines what you're talking about. All right, you got your one, but you're not going to get another one until you blow our minds again.
Yeah. And I think Across the Spider-Verse is a gorgeous movie. Yes. I mean, there are shots of that that are frameable as art. It is beautiful. But for a lot of the Academy, it's a superhero movie. Yep. And it's an animated superhero movie. And it sometimes, I mean, we know this way back in the day. It took a lot, when we had five nominations, like the idea of a Toy Story 3 or an Up getting nominated, or WALL-E, it was never going to happen. And even with 10 nominations now, it's still a little hard for animation to kind of break through, especially, again, if it's an animated superhero movie, which there is a kind of big, there can sometimes be a kind of genre bias in the Oscars.
Yeah.
On Milwaukee.com's Matt Miller is here, and we are talking about the Oscar nominations. Moving on to Best Actor, as you mentioned, Bradley Cooper in Maestro, Coleman Domingo and Rustin, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers. I've heard that Greg has just raved about it. Cillian Murphy and Oppenheimer, and then Jeffrey Wright, as we mentioned, in American Fiction. Who are you feeling for the Best Actor nod?
So we have a kind of fun race here, because originally it seemed like Cillian Murphy was going to be the easy winner. He's incredible in Oppenheimer. He holds that 3-hour-long movie on his shoulders. But Paul Giamatti has got a lot of steam going right now, and he's doing a lot of the things that help people kind of move up in the race. Obviously, he won at the Golden Globes, and he won, I believe, at the Critics' Choice. He had these very charming, very self-effacing speeches. There's been a sense that he's been due. Weirdly enough, I believe this is only his second nomination, and the first Oscar nomination was not for Sideways, which is very weird.
And it wasn't for Private Parts either.
Oh, I thought it was for Sideways.
No, it's a Cinderella Man, I believe.
Okay. The thing that I love about this movie, if you have not seen this movie.
The Holdovers you're talking
about. The Holdovers. Yeah. It is a gorgeous, beautifully shot period piece. Takes place in like the 70s. And for me personally, like, I feel like, you know, I'm not going to tell a man how to work and the jobs he should take. But I feel like Paul Giamatti was starting to take these roles in TV that was just, while he played them well, they were like, I don't know, Billions and other things like that. Him in The Holdovers is going back for me to formula a beautiful place he was when he first came to my world, which is comedic, dramatic, intense, and like just able to be the smartest man in the room while still having toilet paper on his shoe. You know, like, it is such a good movie. And the other, Divine, I can't remember her name right now, The other nomination,
Joy Divine Randolph.
Yes,
Divine Joy Randolph.
She's amazing. Amazing.
She's great. She, her character in The Holdovers is got like a Poochie situation where it's like every time she's not on screen, I'm asking like, what's she up to? It's such a good performance.
Yeah.
That like, it's so beautifully done. And it's a great movie. The way that movie unfolds and unpacks its characters is such a joy. And I know it's such a cliche to be like, they don't make movies like this anymore, but they really kind of don't make movies like The Holdovers anymore. These kind of movies that are purely character dramas.
Yeah.
And there's not really a big like hook to the movie. It's just three loners, you know, trapped in a school over winter break. And I also think it is the best winter movie I've seen in a long time, because it just captures that vibe of, you know, the fun of winter and the warmth of winter, but also the melancholy and the regret and the feel, like the winsomeness of it all. It's such a perfect holiday movie. It's such a perfect winter movie. And Paul Giamatti's great. And again, he's a veteran in the industry who feels like he's due for an Oscar win. And when given a choice sometimes between, you know, a kind of younger actor like Cillian Murphy, and I mean, he's not young by any means, but he's not like a big Oscar actor, and Giamatti, who's been in the industry longer and is due, they might go the way of Giamatti.
Yeah.
When we return, Matt Miller will still be here. We'll talk about Best Actresses and the insult that has rocked Barbie Land. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. So very happy to have you along with us. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Board Lord Calvin, coming to you from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. You can call, you can text, or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. On Milwaukee.com's entertainment guru, Matt Miller, is here, and we're talking about Oscar nominations. Let's talk about the ladies in the Best Actress category, Matt. Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. I've heard she's astonishing. Sandra Huller from Anatomy of a Fall. Gary Mulligan from Maestro. Emma Stone, Poor Things. And Annette Bening, Naiad. Quick question about Poor Things. How weird is that movie?
Quite weird.
Okay.
this is a weird movie. But super watchable. Like, if you can get on its wavelength, I think you'll have a great time. And it's not like... it's not bazonkers weird, but it is. It's an odd movie.
Is it kind of an everything, everywhere, all at once kind of weird?
I would say it's maybe on that line, a little less kind of overtly goofy.
Okay,
as that one, and like a little less like that movie throws a lot at you, a lot all at once.
Everything all at once, or the other? Okay.
Yeah, whereas Poor Things is still like you. I think there's a baseline level of like this is kind of like a Frankenstein kind of tale. It's a little easier to explain than Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is like there's time travel kind of, and like existentialism kind of, and hot dog fingers definitely.
I've watched that movie 3 times, Matt, and I'm still confused. But anyway,
oh, I love that movie. Jamie Lee Curtis, so wonderful.
So who are you feeling for Best Actress?
I believe this is going to probably be Lily Gladstone for this one. Emma Stone, if Emma Stone hadn't already won for La La Land, I think this would be a big year for her. But, you know, she already has her Oscar, so I think there's going to be a lot of excitement to kind of anoint Lily Gladstone, who is tremendous in Killers of the Flower Moon. I think it's such a good performance that she kind of makes up for the script's shortcomings in that movie. So I think it's a great performance. And the Oscars generally like to spread the love. They generally like to get a bunch of different movies on the stage. So I think that's part of the reason why, you know, that this can be Killers of the Flower Moon's award. And maybe The Holdovers, that'll be Divine Joy Randolph, and that can be there. So what is surprising is who isn't here, and that is Margot Robbie for Barbie.
Yes.
I am just...
Well, and that's the slap that's, you know, reverberated through Barbie land
is
that
it.
Neither Greta Gerwig, who directed it, nor Margot Robbie, who starred in it and also produced it, and so did Greta, I think.
She co-wrote it, too.
Co-wrote it, yeah. Neither of them nominated in their respective...
This is important. They are nominated. Margot Robbie is a producer on the movie.
Yes.
So she's nominated there, and Greta Gerwig is nominated in screenplay.
Right, but not for director and not for best actress.
Well, not for director and not for best actress. Though, here's the and everyone's like, but right, they nominated Ken, but not Barbie? Different categories. It's not like people chose Ryan Gosling over Margot Robbie. That's not how voting works. In best supporting actor, a weaker field, they voted for Ryan Gosling. And in Best Actress, a really strong field this year, Margot Robbie didn't get enough votes. I was surprised. Margot Robbie is generally an awards season favorite. She got nominated for that terrible Bombshell movie a few years ago.
Oh, that was awful. Like,
really bad movie. She's not good in it. I would have assumed she would have won here, but it's not, or not won, but been nominated. But the Oscars generally don't nominate performances in blockbusters, and especially comedic blockbusters, in the case of Barbie. So, I mean, if you look back at last year, Top Gun Maverick, the director didn't get in. Tom Cruise wasn't nominated, you know? Mad Max Fury Road, the director got nominated there, but Charlize Theron didn't get nominated, you know? And especially, again, comedies. Comedic performances very rarely get nominated, and I think a lot of people view Barbie as a comedy. And I think that's part of the reason why Greta Gerwig missed out on director. Director is a very, I use this term lovingly, it's a snootier branch of the Academy. So they tend to lean for more artsy, more kind
highbrow,
of, you know,
more highbrow.
Highbrow stuff. And, you know, several directors since Barbie came out talked about, you know, this is a Mattel movie. This is a toy movie. And it's a really good toy movie, but it's a toy movie made by Mattel.
But
so I think there was always some pushback on Barbie. So it's not entirely surprising. And I don't think it is a slap to them as women. Because, important to note, a woman did get nominated for Best Director this year. Justine Triet is the woman director of Anatomy of a Fall. And she probably was the last one in.
I reject the argument that people make as far as saying it's a Mattel movie, because at the end of the day, Martin Scorsese, he directed a movie for a computer company. Like that, you take those arguments, you can go back, because none of these are, there's no longer a Jack Warner anymore. It's Warner Brothers owned by this, owned by that, owned by a chemical company. Like, to me, people, that argument of Mattel, that's dumb.
That's true, but literally Mattel is the producer of Barbie. And, you know, I say this as someone who really likes Barbie, but, you know, that for the Directors Guild, they're going to choose a movie like Zone of Interest. They have generally gone much more international on their picks in recent years, you know? They've gone with stuff like Cold War and, you know, kind of more avant-garde, more international-flavored movies, as opposed to blockbusters or kind of expected American movies. So they're not surprising. And I don't think it is people trying to slight Barbie. It got 8 nominations. It's one of the most nominated movies of the year this year.
Yeah.
If they didn't like Barbie, they would have given it the Selma treatment and been like, you have, all right, here you can have like the basic, like the thanks for playing best picture nomination that won't result in anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know, a best song nomination. Congratulations.
I love that song.
They gave it 8 nominations.
That's
true. And they nominated America Ferrera for best supporting actress for essentially a speech in that movie. I think that is why she is nominated.
All right. Well,
so
they
like Barbie. They respect Barbie.
We'll all calm down now. Over Barbie.
Oh, I'm not calming down.
Oh, we're going to calm down. Matt Miller.
It's just very funny this, because it's not like people were like, Ryan Gosling, not Margot Robbie for actor. They were different categories.
You can read more of Matt Miller at onmilwaukee.com. He joins us on the last Friday of the month. Thank you so very much, Matt. Really appreciate it. We will
Thanks
see
for
you
having me.
In February. Stay close. We have news coming up next, followed by the one and only Todd Allbaugh Show. Thank you, as always, for listening and calling and texting. My mouth is not working. It's the end of the week. I genuinely hope you find some joy today and you get the chance to share it. Keep it right here. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.